Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's just quickly have a chat about my new book, which is coming. It's out June the 27th, and I would just adore you all if you could click pre-order now, because I promise you, this book is even better than my others. The Science of Plant-Based Nutrition is for everyone. It's for people that eat meat and for people that don't. And it's going to help educate you all about the benefits of a plant-based diet. We cover things such as, obviously, the gut microbiome, the immune system. Should you be worried about plant milk, seed oils, anti-nutrients? Do you need to take omega-3 supplements? There are so many questions, and I basically think that the world of scientific research is just changing at a dizzying pace, and myths and fads are proliferating everywhere. So with the Science of Plant-Based Nutrition, you can achieve a plant-packed diet that's right for you. This book is for children all the way up to adults. I hope that it will be in universities again, like the previous one, and schools and libraries. And I've got the most amazing forwards and good praise for it from Deliciously Ella, Joe Wicks, Fern Cotton, and Tim Spector. So if you could head over to Amazon now, hit pre-order on The Science of Plant-Based Nutrition, I promise you won't regret it. Welcome back to season 17 of Food for Thought. It's incredible to be here. My name is Rhiannon Lambert. For everyone that doesn't know, the reason this podcast is so unique is that I myself am a registered nutritionist. So I have two nutritional science degrees, a master practitioner, further diplomas in different areas of nutrition. The Retrition Clinic I founded in 2016, and we have some amazing psychologists, dietitians, nutritionists in there to help you with your one-to-one advice. Not forgetting also, if you need any additional support to your diet, we have Retrition Plus, which is formulated for you with the latest scientific research out there. Now, we're here to bring you a fantastic series ahead, full of tons of amazing guests. If you need any extra information, you can find Retrition across all social media platforms, even from TikTok to Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, and of course, you can head over to Amazon and leading bookshops and find any Rhiannon Lambert authored book out there, from The Science of Nutrition to recipe books about pregnancy, and of course, my first baby back in 2017, Renourish. So let's get on to it. Enjoy season 17 of Food for Thought. In a world where the demands of modern life just seem completely and utterly overwhelming, how on earth do we prioritize our fitness? How do we prioritize our health? What on earth are we doing that's right and wrong? And this is a discussion I had today with the incredible Joe Wicks. We discussed ultra-processed foods, the fact that even Joe sometimes questions, hang on, what I thought was healthy for years, is this still healthy now? And this is a dilemma I think so many people are going through right now, not just parents, but everybody is completely overwhelmed with very loud voices and camps online. Joe has spoken in this episode today about his experiences with very vocal voices online, toxic cultures, body image as well. We delve into body image. We delve into the parallels of living in America and the UK, his four-day working week with his business, his approach to mental health and fitness. So many of you will know him as the body coach who took it upon himself to provide free PE classes designed for children and families throughout the whole COVID-19 pandemic. It was amazing, and quite rightly so. He was awarded an MBE in 2020. Now, he has an infectious approach to energy and fitness. He's very, very real. He is not afraid to literally put his heart on his sleeve and describe what's going on in his life as well. And now he's released his new book as well. It's called Fitter, Healthier, Happier for Children. And honestly, his outlook is something that I think the Food for Thought listeners will absolutely love. He's just like we are. Like, I agree that food should be positive, exercise should be positive. He's agreed to come back for a part two. So this is definitely part one. And let's get on with the podcast. Hello, Joe.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good. I feel like it's been a lifetime trying to get you pinned down for this recording. So I appreciate your time so much. You're a dad of three, four on the way. How did that happen?
I know. Yeah. Well, I've been following for years now. And obviously, maybe when you first started following back in the day, like, you know, the lean in 15 days, it was just me with an iPhone, you know, living in a one bedroom flat, no kids or anything. And now my life changed so much. So yeah, I've got three children with Rosie. We've got another one on the way in June. So yeah, my life changed a lot in the last sort of 10 years.
But I do think, like, when you look at your journey, so obviously I think I can relate to you in a way. You know, you graft, you work 24/7. It's pure hard work and graft that goes into obviously what you have built in terms of the amount of people you're now able to reach and help, which is very inspiring. But equally, I think becoming a parent, it's probably defined the direction perhaps you've taken the business, would you say?
It's definitely, yeah, it's definitely sort of given me a different insight into like what it's really like to be a parent whilst working and trying to stay fit, trying to put good food on the table for yourself and the kids, like, is more challenges that come. But I feel like my journey's been very organic, almost in chronological order of like sort of how I've just been growing, you know, as a person. So obviously in the early days, it was just me. It was really about, you know, fat loss and getting lean. And it was all about body image. And as I've gone on this journey, it's much more now about family fitness. It's about confidence and sort of mental health. So I think I've changed my kind of narrative. Although the mission's always been the same, I've always just been trying to get people cooking and moving. I think as a parent, and obviously now trying to navigate through that world with, you know, trying to get them to eat healthy and also try to take care of my own mental health. Like, I think, yeah, it's just sort of happened in the order it was going to happen, if you like. So with the new babies obviously came along, I had to learn how to sort of wean, you know, and do the weaning. So I obviously went down that path with Charlotte Sterling Reid and did a wonderful weaning book. So I think it wasn't sort of strategic planning that I'm going to do this and then release this book or do a kid's book. It just sort of happened because I'm growing as a parent and I like sharing the sort of things I'm learning as I go.
Yeah, I think it's really refreshing. And I know you've spoken before quite a bit about your mental health in childhood, which is something perhaps I think everyone naturally reflects on this sort of thing as, you know, as we grow, as we get older. But it really shaped you, didn't it? The outlet that exercise was for you, I think, in order to cope with everyday situations. So if we're going right back to the beginning, young Joe, exercise became your crutch, as they say.
Yeah, well, just for context. So I grew up in a household with two parents with mental health issues and addiction. So my dad, you know, was a heroin addict from a very young age for myself. And my mum had extreme like OCD around the house, cleaning a lot, and also anxiety disorders, you know, lots of compulsion and stuff. So it was quite a chaotic, you know, I had one extreme with my dad just who was completely either absent or there, but not present because, you know, he was just out of it. And then my mum who wanted everything clean and I had to, you know, tidy my room and it was very sort of strict and confrontational. So I had two sort of very difficult personality types to deal with, if you like. And for me, I think the one thing that really helped me navigate through that and release that from my mind and body was exercise, through mainly through PE at school. So it was a pivotal moment where instead of turning to, you know, which most teenagers might have done, which is, you know, drinking and smoking weed and those sort of things, I actually just had I just felt like exercise was my thing. And as soon as I could join a gym, you know, at 16, I joined the local gym in Epsom and I would go out every day after school. So I had that as an outlet. And I think, yeah, I'm really passionate about sharing that because a lot of people don't see the benefits of exercise other than it's just like a punishment. It's just something you do like to look a certain way. But really, it's an amazing tool that we can use to navigate through the stresses and the pressures of life.
Absolutely. And I think as it releases in the brain, it's like endocannabinoids and things that I think a lot of people call it endorphins, but it's actually a more complex pathway in our brain when we're discussing exercise. And it's incredible, the physical benefits. But what I find interesting about your story there is you say, right, I was 16, I could join a gym. Who got you into that space? How did you know? Like, it's just so rare, I think, for kids, especially back in the day, to get involved in that scene at that age.
Well, my first introduction to sport was obviously with my PE teacher. So I love PE at school. I do cross country, you know, football, every sport you could throw at me, I'd have a go at. I wasn't like a great sportsman, but I just loved it. And so that was my kind of introduction. I got my first job was at Wilkinson's, you know, Wilko's, it used to be called Wilkinson's,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Which unfortunately went under, which is a shame.
It did, like Woolworths. I was gutted.
Yeah. So Woolies went, Wilko's went. And I used to work, you know, on the till. I worked a Saturday and a Sunday and I think I'd maybe get, I don't know, let's say 100 quid a month. And I used £50 of that to join the local Holmes Place gym in Epsom because, I don't know, I was just drawn to like wellness. I was drawn to the gym and I knew they had a sauna and a steam room. And the thought of having somewhere to go, like a bit of a sanctuary. So I'd finish school at say 3:30, 4:00, walk into Epsom, straight to the gym, and I'd be there, you know, doing my, you know, I'd spend hours in there. I remember I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I didn't have like a men's health magazine or any kind of clue about what to, you know, put in my body or how to exercise. But I just sort of went along, did my bit, and I tried to sort of, you know, build a bit of muscle because I was very skinny as a kid as well. So I was quite self-conscious. I definitely had an issue with that, like wanting to sort of build and change my body a little bit.
I mean, as a young male, I think, speaking about body image, it's such an unspoken narrative that females are so aware of. But the fact that you just mentioned you were quite aware, you were quite slight in frame and that you went to the gym. Do you think there was also a part of you in your mind that was aware of how you looked at that young age?
Yeah, I've got memories of like my brother Nicky, like my older brother, he's 18 months older than me. You know, he used to call me skinny and skinny legs. And I remember like it had a massive impact on me because I always felt like I was way skinny and way smaller than I should have been for my, you know, when I look at other kids my age that were like sort of seemed to be growing. So for sure it was instilled in me at a young age that I wasn't quite, I don't know, masculine enough. I wasn't as muscly enough as I should be. And it didn't like damage me, but I definitely think it drove me and motivated me to try, you know, try and lift some weights, try and sort of see if I can sort of change the structure of my body. But I think, you know, you're talking about that as one person, right? That's just my brother. But now with social media, you wake up and you see the perfect physique on like 18, 19, 20 year old guys. And you think, well, that is what men should look like. So I think the pressure now must be even more intense because you're constantly bombarded with images of the perfect physique for both men and women, which is such a small percentage of the population, right, that will ever look like that. And so, yeah, I'm sure that the pressures to be a young teenager now are even more intense. And I imagine that's leading to a lot of body dissatisfaction in young men.
Yeah, and it's quite worrying. I mean, I'm a mum of two boys, and I do think about this sometimes growing up. At first, I thought, oh, I've got two boys. I don't need to, you know, worry as much about social media. But I do. It's equal. And I think that's something that we need to bring up and we do need to have discussions around because it's not healthy to absorb that level of abnormality every single day. Because like you said, it's probably 1-2% of the population. You know, I've worked with these people that come out of these TV shows where they're completely ripped and then they come out. But to get to that point, they had been doing these dangerous fad diets. It's unsustainable. Their digestive system is messed up when they get out, like completely messed up. And it takes us a good year and a half to recover and get everything back up and running again. So do you encounter a lot in the talks you do in schools? Because one thing I love, Joe, is that you do so much for the future generations. And I'm guessing that kind of comes from where you found yourself looking back as a young male. But do you find people coming up to you and opening up to you and talking to you all the time about their insecurities, about their body image or their health?
Well, when I do the school visits, I mainly visit primary schools because I've found that with the secondary schools, they're already very disengaged from exercise. They're not as kind of, they're very self-conscious. So I know instantly for a fact that they're probably feeling a bit self-conscious about their bodies. They're probably not as, you know, as active and a bit more sedentary with the technology that's obviously competing to get our attention. But I think with the young kids, I don't really talk about sort of body image or body weight or even food. It's really just about the movement. I say, right, come on, yeah, guys, let's do a workout. Let's pick up our energy. And I really ram home the message around the mental health and the mood boosting benefits of exercise so that if they are children that are living in difficult, you know, but difficult situations at home and they've got challenges, that they know that they can actually use exercise as a coping mechanism. So it's very much focused on movement, energy, mental health. But yeah, you know, I'm very passionate. You know, I've obviously got kids and I'm passionate about the food I give my kids, and I want to share that with everybody else. But some things are very difficult to talk about. Like some subjects are very triggering, like the, you know, with sleep, whether it's about feeding children or helping children, you know, lose weight or be active. It's very difficult because so many parents, of all parents care and love their children, but sometimes it's very difficult, the situations they've got in their own life or their own mental health. So, you know, you've got to be very sensitive when you're talking about certain subjects like that, I think.
Yeah, no, you're completely right. But I think that's really great. I think it shows you have a good responsible, you know, hat on you because there is so much nuance and there's so much that we cannot possibly understand how to convey. And one of the key messages I was always told from my training was never discuss body shape or weight. Try and, like you said, just keep the focus on something positive, something they can do at home, which I love. Now, as a male influencer, just to talk on this side of social media very quickly, as we're kind of on the topic as well, what have been the biggest hurdles that you have had to overcome? Because I know that I think, so just personal opinion, sitting on the sidelines as a female health professional, I see a lot of kind of bravado between high profile male Instagram accounts and TikTok people, they're not scared to kind of call people out, and they're quite vocal, I'd say more so in a direct way. How have you managed those types of challenges being put on that pedestal?
Well, you'll notice from seeing me over the years, I've never got involved in that stuff. You know, I've never like been someone who reacts to these things. You know, in the early days, most of the criticism I ever received was mainly from, you know, other fitness coaches and trainers, because I once said, you know, I don't necessarily believe that calorie counting is for everyone. And I just don't. And I've never like included calories in my app or my recipe books, because ultimately, I think for me personally, the challenge is, can I get someone who has no confidence in the kitchen, who doesn't cook, to cook? And so I think sometimes that's the first step, right? If you want to get into the macros and calories, of course, that's fine. But for some people, it's very overwhelming. And so I used to get a lot of stick. We're not going to name any trainers, but I'm sure you see some old, you know, trainers used to make videos and podcasts and dig me out. But again, you know, I never retaliate. And I think because I didn't retaliate and I just sort of carried on doing my thing and being positive energy, when I see people that are doing that in the community, I just think it must be exhausting to be negative, taking people down, doing meme, you know, Instagrams and taking the piss out of other people. Like, how that can't last forever. Do you know what I mean? And I do think that the reason my channels have grown and I'm still going after 10 years is because I've got a really consistent message, a very positive message, so that I make you feel welcome, that I don't alienate foods, I don't demonize diets. I just say, look, there's no perfect answer to this, but come along with me and I'll give you a little bit of motivation. I'll give you a little bit of, you know, some tips on some recipes and some workouts. But yeah, I see it all the time. You know, people that are popping on social media, then there's instantly a wave of people trying to take that person down and ride off their content and ride off their name. And I see it all the time, and I don't necessarily agree with it. And that's why, although I'm in the fitness space, I've never really considered myself as like a fitness professional within that world. Like, you wouldn't see me at Body Power and, you know, doing all these expos. Like, it's just not really my scene. Whereas I believe that fitness should be accessible. And I think that social media should be used in a positive way to build a loving community, as opposed to one that's fueled purely on negativity and viral clickbait and stuff. It's like, it's just draining. I can't even deal with it anymore, you know?
It is beyond draining. Well, thank goodness you are there, Joe, because it does mean people can actually feel included. It absolutely drives me up the wall. I'm not even going to go into that anymore. I think you executed and just explained that in the perfect way. And I couldn't agree more with the sentiment that you've just said, that we're there to help people. And I think if people have a core message underneath what they're delivering and what they're doing, it will come across and it will last the test of time, rather than, sadly, look, guys, everyone listening, trends come and go. You know that if you listen to Food for Thought, there's always a new trend. I think we've seen so many of them. And in the fitness world, Joe must witness all of those as well. Now, balancing life, Joe, between the US and the UK, they are two different worlds. I want to know, first of all, why did you want to go and live? I mean, actually, I could probably guess why, but why did
can
you...
Can I ask you, before we go into that question, can I ask you a question quickly? Is that
please
right?
Do, yeah.
So can I ask you a question? Because as someone who is obviously in the social media space and, you know, really qualified at what you do, do you ever get confused and kind of like a bit disillusioned by all this content that's being put out there? Because I sometimes get, even myself, like, I think, what is healthy? What can I eat? You know, certain things. And there's so many sort of... people that are so set in their belief systems that they're raised the right way, you know, their way's the right way. And then suddenly you start to question, like, am I actually eating healthy? Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean about that?
Yeah. And I think the current conversation around ultra processed foods hasn't helped matters in this case. But yeah, I guess myself as a health professional, see, the bottom line is, if you speak to any registered nutritionist or dietitian, when we work in a clinic, we see people day in, day out for years and years and years. It all comes down to the same thing, which you've also echoed. It's just cooking from scratch more, if you're able to. It's having a good idea of, you know, how much versus the quality of food you, in the lifestyle you lead, the sleep and the exercise. It is so basic. And the problem is, people are overcomplicating it. And it does become very... I get disillusioned. Some days I think, why am I still here? Why am I doing this? Am I too old for this now? You know, I'm thinking, you know, I'm not doing all these TikTok trends like these youngsters. I'm not drinking chia seed water. You know, I'm not telling people to pop collagen pills every day, because I genuinely just know it's a waste of time and money. So for me, it's just another trend pops up. I see it and I think, oh, you know, more people wasting their money down the drain. And scientists get very excited, Joe. So, and I know quite a lot of them that are in this high profile space at the moment, and I know them personally and I know them on a professional level, and I know how excited people get about their research and they want to tell the world about their research. But the problem is you cannot always apply new nutritional scientific research on a public health level. And that's where people get lost. We've either got people way up here at the top that are shouting about perfecting the wellness in every trend possible and monitoring their glucose or doing this and doing that. And then you've got people that are stuck at the bottom that need people like yourself, Joe, just to say, you can cook. Let's give this a go. You can walk to the bus stop. And the middle bit is this kind of noise of people trying to just jump on the trends. And it gets really boring, to be honest.
I've been feeling, like they're so extreme in their views that it feels like you alienate so many people, because obviously income plays a big factor, but also just education and facilities. Like, you know, do they even have the time? And, you know, I obviously believe that we can all find a little bit of time, but I think it's become so extreme in the views that I'm now like, you know, I used to love my porridge and berries, and now I've been told that actually oats aren't good for you and berries have got these chemicals, and you start to think, so what can I eat? Just literally eggs and avocado. And then say, well, people say, well, eggs have got these, you know, da da da, and you're like, oh, blimey, now what can I eat now today?
And avocado is not doing the wrong thing. You're not alone, and everybody is feeling like that right now. And it is the biggest bugbear. I personally think we should just get social media regulated. Nutritionist title needs to be protected. People giving out advice, there needs to be a hierarchy of people that are actually discussing what to do. Oats are not bad for you. Porridge is a really healthy start to the day. I am so done with, I mean, look, people live till 100 in some countries that eat porridge every single day. They are very happy and they live to a ripe old age and they're very healthy. And I think the dietary approach I like, as you know, is plant-based, and that does not mean vegan. You can still eat meat, you can still eat fish, you can still eat eggs. It just means more plants. People just need to eat more vegetables and fruit every day. And they need to forget about all this other, you don't need to be carnivore, you don't need to be vegan, you don't need to be anything. You just do you, but just try and make sensible choices, which is, why I love what you're doing, Joe. But I do think it must be really confusing. And you know, going back to the subject of, you know, you living half in America, half in the UK, does that confuse you more? Because you obviously go to America and you must see these, I mean, I'd love to go, but see these incredible, like, trending juice bars and these places where people are putting these magic potions into drinks. And then you're thinking, do I need to buy that? Is it more prominent over there than it is over here?
Yeah, listen, imagine, like, you know, the ultra processed food economy system here, and then times it by a million. It's unbelievable out there, you know, like,
yeah.
Every single shop is full of snacks, and there's like a million types of snack bars. There's a million types of energy drinks and greens powders. And so, I just feel like all the money at the moment is being pumped into these kind of supplements, pills, you know, shakes, because people will always want that shortcut. So where there's that will and a demand, they're always going to be pumping so much investment into it. And there's some healthy food there. Like, I obviously spend my time in Santa Monica and Venice Beach, so there's a very wonderful health scene. There's a lot of plant-based and vegan restaurants, which are also nice. But in terms of the actual supermarkets, you know, whether you're walking into, you know, like they call it, there's a Gelson's, or there's Trader Joe's or Whole Foods or Erewhon, they're all full of the same stuff, just branded differently. You know, organic honey O's, you know, gluten-free. And it's like your mind just melts, because when you actually look at the landscape, you realize there's one aisle of vegetables, one aisle of dairy and meat, and the rest of it is 95% ultra-processed, like long shelf life packet stuff. And what breaks my heart is that, like, it doesn't matter what your income is. I really believe that people are all buying the same stuff, just in different formats with a different brand, because you know, ultimately, it's quick, it's convenient, and we've been told that, you know, this is what healthy food is and this is what we need to give our kids. But it's like, it's so overwhelming and it's so abundant and so in your face that you just almost like, it's almost like we don't have a choice. You're just going to end up buying it at some point through the day, because it's everywhere, every touch point, isn't it? From going to the petrol station to, you know, going to a hospital, I was saving, going to, you know, on a plane or a train station. It's like, what are your options? If you don't carry and prepare your own food, what are our options? And it's normally ultra processed foods.
I know. And it's a very nuanced conversation, because obviously, like you said, budget does come into it in a certain factor. As we said, it's the environment you live in. It's where you live. It's how much money you have. It's the education you have on the choices you make. Like, I know it is cheaper to cook from scratch, but lots of people think it's cheaper to buy a McDonald's. So we're looking at this kind of debate here. And like you said, again, with ultra processed foods, they are everywhere, but not all of them are bad. So it really is, you know, I'd rather you buy a ultra processed vegan burger with beans and pulses that's been made into some kind of burger patty and frozen than buy an ultra processed McDonald's burger that had been frozen. I'm using that as a brand example I know I can name without getting in trouble. So those are the things that would be in the freezer, and there are different choices you can make. But this is government level, Joe. The problem we've got is, like you said, people are brainwashed. So it does frustrate me, but sometimes they have to learn on their own, and there's nothing we can actually do to change people that believe carnivore is the only way, or believe vegan's the only way, or believe that we can't change these different camps on the internet. It's just stay true to your message and try and get the people in that we can have that little bit of positive impact in. I just want to speak very quickly about the Retrition Plus vegan multivitamin. So I designed this with Retrition Plus to support those that are following a plant-based diet with four key nutrients. We're talking about vitamin B12, of course, iron, iodine, and selenium. Now, it's packed with the essential nutrients, and our multivitamin is, of course, your trusted companion for maintaining a healthy, you know, vegan plant-based lifestyle. So despite its powerful nutritional support, it comes in one of the smallest capsules. This was deliberate because I've always had a difficult time taking pills and supplements. So it's convenient, it's easy to incorporate into your daily routine. It will elevate your journey, whether it be vegan, whether it be plant-based, with essential scientifically backed nutrients in one simple capsule. If you guys want to go and check out the range at Retrition Plus and our new products, which I know are going to help so many people, just head over to RetritionPlus.com, and you can also check us out on social media at Retrition Plus. Interesting analogy with the Whole Foods packets, I have to say, because your new book as well, Fitter, Healthier, Happier, that's targeted, isn't it, at reaching more younger people, you know, getting an audience into seeing the happiness in food, seeing the happiness in exercise, because it's quite depressing right now, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's a lovely book. It's a non-fiction children's book aimed at kids between sort of 6 and 12 years old. And it kind of takes you on a journey through the body and mind. So, you know, about learning about the systems, you know, the muscles, the bones, all the kind of respiratory system, and then like taking you through a journey on nutrition, like what's you know, how does food affect our diet, our you know, our gut, our mood. So a nice gentle kind of introduction to that. And then the final section is about like knowing your mind, so like dealing with feelings of anxiety or stress, and teaching children of, you know, very gentle sort of breathing techniques or a little bit of stretching or exercise, just to kind of, again, teach them that they can shift their mind so they can change how they're feeling. And yeah, it came out a couple of weeks ago. It's going really well. And I think a lot of parents that have got that for their kids, it's a nice, if you see your child reading that book, you know it's a positive thing. They're taking in some really useful, insightful information.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it is just a minefield. In fact, having this conversation with you now, sometimes I do feel so overwhelmed to the point where you feel you can't say anything, because the sensible advice just gets lost, doesn't it, in a complete and utter media storm of snappy clickbait headlines. Have you found that getting this new book out there has been a little bit more of a challenge compared to perhaps other books before? Has it been a different approach to, you know, getting it out there, the press, the media with it?
Well, I've done some good press. It's mainly, you know, it's obviously the people that are buying this book is usually the parents. It's not really the kids that are sort of going into the bookshops. Yeah. But if you can reach them through social media, you can encourage them. You know, I've got newsletters, and I've got obviously got a little bit of a schools database. So I've definitely like promoted it with schools and things. But ultimately, I'm hoping this is one of those books that children will read and share it with their friends, or they'll tell their family about it. And it's it might not be like a best-selling cookbook sort of number, but I always believe that even if one or two people read that book, like, it's a positive thing. So I don't get really caught up in the volume of sales. It's more about like the impact that might have on, if a brother reads it and gives it to his little sister, you know, maybe it's a positive kind of knock-on effect. But yeah, it's been good. I've done the one show, I did Blue Peter, which is quite funny. I did a few things like that.
But I used to love Blue Peter.
Yeah, I did Blue Peter. But yeah, I'm just, I just try to like use different mediums to share the same message. If you think about back in the day with Lean and 15, you know, it was really right. Can I get people to batch cook at home, make it simple? P with Joe in lockdown was really a home workout. So it's accessible. You can do it together. There's no equipment. And, you know, even now with my blog, or if I've done any podcasts, it's the same message throughout, which is like you're saying, the basics, right? Sleep, movement, and food. And ultimately, if you get those three right, the mental health improves, the energy, your passion for life, and your focus and productivity improve. But the challenge is, we live in a world where we're stuck to our phones. We're being made to be sedentary, and obviously cooking less than ever. So I do see there's an increase in you know, mental health, poor mental health in children as well as adults. So all we could do is, rather, I just think there's so many people on there now online that are like, the problem, that's always so negative. It's like conspiracy this, it's negative. And I always think, look, you can talk about that all day long, but I'd rather be part of the solution and just be the positive energy. It's like, look, come and try this yoga workout. Come and do this workout for seniors. Try this homemade curry. You know, look at these lovely homemade chocolate bars. There's ways of putting out good content that's positive and uplifting, as opposed to like doubt, putting everyone down and thinking, oh, I'm failing. I'm a terrible mom. I'm not doing it right. And that's what I feel like there's a lot of that on social media at the moment. That if you ain't doing it my way, you're wrong. You're unhealthy. Yeah. You're going to get cancer. You're going to get this. It's like, give me a break. I'm just giving my kids porridge and blueberries. Like, it's not that bad.
It's wild. The seed oils, like we said, the ultra processed foods, it's the same message as it has been for years, which is try to cook more and just avoid buying things in packets. It really is not a new message. It's just suddenly been brought to our attention in a different way. Everything's packaged up. And like you said, there is no one size fits all. Let's focus on positivity. Now, you are very open and honest all the time, and in some cases, hilarious. So just a complete disclaimer, I wasn't going to bring this up in conversation today, but my amazing colleague, Bryony, she's like, you have to talk about the farting. And I was like, what? What do you mean the farting?
I knew it.
Yeah, I know. And then she sent me the video. And then I thought, I remembered seeing it at the time. You are so open and honest that didn't you just upload it anyway? Didn't you just run off to the corner of the room, do like the biggest fart in the world live, and then came back on and you just didn't care?
I was literally here in this room. So it was during lockdown, the second or third lockdown, I did a live. And when you do a YouTube live, there's a few sort of like 20 seconds where it's like buffering. It doesn't upload straight away. But something happened. And obviously I didn't think I was live. And I thought, I've got to let this out now before I go live. And I sort of in a panic, squeezed out. It went a such a loud fart. And obviously I was so embarrassed. And I said I didn't realize until the end, there was like, oh my God, did you just hear Joe do a fart? So I messaged my friend Dom. I said, listen, Dom, go and clip the video, edit the video, remove it, like upload it again. Anyway, cut a long story short, by that point, the Daily Mail had it, the Sun newspaper, it was all over the internet. So I owned it and I said, oh, you know what? Sometimes you got to just take ownership of these things. And I am someone, I'll be honest with you, like, and I talked to Dr. Megan Rossi about this. Like, I'm a very gassy person. I eat a lot of food and I'm always bubbling. I'm like a cow because I know there's certain foods that don't agree with me. And so I'm always full of air. Like, I'm like a trap, like a little, I'm a whoopee cushion.
Well, we fart 15 to 20 times a day on average, so I wouldn't worry about it too much. It's the fact that that's the type of content that goes viral. And I find that it blows my mind. But it's good to be lighthearted about it. And it's really good to be honest and open, because sometimes I think that'll reassure people. So positive mindset, navigating the online world. Now, how the hell do you get up in the morning? Because as a parent, I want to know this. I know I've messaged you before when we've both been like up at like 2 or 3 in the morning. I just don't want to work out. I feel like I've got nothing left. One child's kicking off and then the other one, like... Is there any tip you can give me that's going to like get me out there to move more on days like that?
Well, we've gone through a bit of a journey with the kids, because we had with Indy, she was born and she was such a good sleeper. Like, I remember she used to sleep 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. Like, it was the dream, right? So you think, oh, wow, this is easy. Then Marley came along, a little bit more challenging, but Lenny's been our toughest sleeper. So Lenny's the third kid. You know, she's very needy. She loves a cuddle. She wants to be held every night. And so we co-sleeped a lot more with Lenny. So definitely disrupted our sleep, because you think in the end, like, oh, that's the right thing to do. But ultimately, when they don't have their own routine and their own like ability to sort of self-soothe and get themselves back to sleep, everyone's just tired and stressed out all the time. So we've eventually got her into her own room. It's taken a few weeks of like easing her in, and she's definitely doing better. But ultimately, there's still nights where she'll wake 2 or 3 times in a night. You know, she wants water, she wants her nappy changed or something. So on those days though, like, I definitely agree. Like, I am half the man I could be. I'm not the body coach. My food choices, you know, my willpower around food goes out the window. There's something for sure going on in the brain, isn't there, where you just crave hot, warm, sugary carbohydrates, you know, all those things that you wouldn't normally choose. And when I do exercise, you're talking like 50% effort, 60%. So yeah, it's the biggest disruptor. But I do think the only advice I can say is, like, just rather than watch that, you know, 2 hours of Netflix in the evening between, say, 9:30 and 11:30, just try and commit to getting to bed early. So when the babies go down at, say, 7:30, 8:30, me and Rosie, we're trying to get in bed at 9:30 so that we can actually be asleep at 10:00. And then you've got a chance of getting a decent night's sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so, so true. And you're right, there is something there. So the reason you crave that sugar, all those hot foods, it's almost like an evolutionary adaptive response as well. It's fast releasing energy. So your brain is just saying, give me the food now. Where can I get a spike? And your ghrelin, your hunger hormone is spiked the next day when you've had no sleep. It's just an adaptive process to get you through. But I've always admired you for your job. And I guess the difference is as well, it is your job. So actually for you to show up, you kind of have to show up, right? You can't let down your whole community because they do part runs with you. You'll say online, hey guys, I'm in this city today. And how many people join you? Hundreds. It's amazing.
Yeah, I love doing them. I do them all over the country. So yeah. If I'm in a new town, let's say I'm doing a bit of PR in Manchester, I'll be like, right, I'm going to be here at this park and I turn up. Yeah, sometimes 50 people, sometimes 1,000. But I love community. I love doing live events. So, you know, when you do these talks or school visits, it's really taking my world from a digital screen and looking at an iPhone or a digital camera to actually like seeing people. So, yeah, I love it. And it's the best part of my job, you know, the community that I've built, because when I go to these events, I do these big pop-up workouts, you know, I get such a lovely range of people from like toddlers to grandparents. And I love that. I love that I've been able to connect with so many people on such a big scale. And as long as I've got the energy, like, I'll continue to do it. Because I think, you know, there's this fear that, like, you know, people are going to switch off one day. But I do believe that if I'm still inspiring at a certain age and I grow and I become a grandparent, you know, maybe I'll still be inspiring at some point, because we all need someone to get us going. We all need someone to be like, oh, I feel like that. Joe's, you know, the same as me, or he's experiencing the same things I'm going through with my body. And so, yeah, I'm hoping I have a really long career in fitness. I'd love to be doing it when I'm older.
It's interesting. I wasn't actually going to bring that up, but that's a really good question. I thought when this social media app came around, because I think I was later to Instagram. When I was at university, there was no Instagram. It was just Twitter. And seeing it grow, I thought it was going to be around, what, for a year or two? People would get bored of these platforms. People would move off. It looks like they're kind of here forever, which is kind of an adaptation that I don't think anyone foresaw. Have you ever thought about how you're going to be online in like maybe 10, are you going to be online in 10, 20 years? Isn't that mad?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've always thought that like social media is such a positive thing, because I've always loved building community. And I always say to my brother, Nicky, like, I didn't set out to build a company. I set out to build a community, and I just loved sharing content. I loved sharing workouts and recipes, and it was a buzz. It really was a buzz. But yeah, I never imagined it was going to lead to a career, book deals and all that sort of stuff. But I think if you use it in a positive way, you can have a really positive impact. So I obviously share lovely like messages from people, the semi messages that might have been just doing my YouTube videos from afar for like 2 years. And they say, look, I just want to say thank you. And so when I get those, I share them, because it can also take another person who might be feeling a bit down or a bit flat and maybe go, oh, you know what? Look, they had mental health issues. They were feeling really, really down. And so I just think there's this really nice ripple effect that social media can have. But I don't know, I like to think that I'm not going to have a phone in my face forever. I sort of use it, but I also know that I really am quite happy when I'm not on the phone, when I'm in Santa Monica or I'm at the farm or I'm away for the weekend and I'm just literally like a normal dad off my phone being with the kids. So I sort of have a love-hate relationship with it. But I still have a lot of energy for the people that I communicate with. And so I just think, just keep doing it until, you know, you fall out of love or you feel like you've got no energy for it. But I still think I'm making an impact. You know, I'm having a positive change on people's lives. So, but who knows? I don't know where I'll be in 20 years.
Yeah. It's a hard question that I only just suddenly thought about it. But how do you manage as well a 4-day working week? So I love the idea. I think that's an amazing idea for your team. And you found a lot of success with it. Does it work with you? Because obviously you homeschool your kids as well. I just want to know about how this whole dynamic of homeschooling, country hopping and work kind of gels.
Yeah, so we are here most of the time. We're here like 9 months of the year, but obviously we have a place over there. We go there for like 3 months of the year. So we're kind of, that's my downtime where I'm not really known there. Like I can just be completely anonymous. Like I can just be on the beach, like in my shorts. And, you know, it's just me and the kids. It's quite lovely. But yeah, I suppose the homeschooling is amazing, but it's challenging. It's not easy. Like, you know, there's me and Rosie and we've got three kids. So you've got Marley at a different level. Indy's obviously like key stage one learning. And then you've got the little baby who's just climbing around. I call her the mountain goat because she climbs everything all the time. Like she's never on the floor. She's always on a higher surface. But yeah, you know, it has its challenges, but I think it would be very difficult to do it on your own. I think because I am at home a lot, you know, I can take Indy and do a couple of things with her. Then Rosie might do, you know, some subjects, but yeah, it's the choice you've made. I don't know if it's a forever choice because Indy's only five, but because of the life we love to travel, we like being together essentially. I just wasn't ready to sort of give that up straight away. But I think there might be a point where we go, you know what, maybe now we're not at a level we can teach her and keep her up to a standard that she would be if she was in school. I think we'll either get her, maybe get a tutor, or we'll put her into school again. But yeah, you know, it's mad. It's a juggling act, isn't it? And some days you're an amazing dad, but not great at work. Other days you're amazing at work, not the best dad. I just think it's going with the flow and not putting pressure on yourself to be perfect every day.
And supporting women. So one thing I think that a lot of women as well that are your audience, which is probably a very large percentage, feel very comfortable because they can see how you support Rosie and the family. Now, has it been almost eye-opening, obviously, seeing your wife become a mother, seeing the transition that women go through? Has it been quite an, I don't know, a wake-up call or a nice way of seeing the balance in society? I'd love to know your thoughts on a male perspective of what females go through during this like motherhood transition time.
Yeah, well, I've obviously my mum was basically a single parent, and I was one of three boys, and I was the middle one. I was the naughty one, bit of a troublemaker. So when I look back to like how much stress I must have put her under, and how, you know, how amazing she was as a mum. She wasn't always the most patient mum, but she loved us and she always, you know, looked out for us and she cared for us a lot. And so I think that love anchored me in all the chaos. You know, I just always felt loved. Mm. But, you know, seeing Rosie, obviously when I met Rosie, I was in love, I was infatuated with her, and I'm just in love with her as a person. But you don't know what they're going to be like as a parent, because it's only when you're really tested and your patience pushed to the extreme and you're under this pressure that you realise, you know, how do people react and how are people with, you know, when it comes to nurturing and being maternal. And what I'll say about Rosie, she's very naturally maternal. So I've learned a lot from her around patience and being calm and just interacting slightly differently, because my mum was a bit shouty. And so I'm from that kind of mindset of like, it was just screaming and shouting is the way to deal with it. But now I'm learning to do that differently. And I think I've learned a lot of that from Rosie. But yeah, you know, she's amazing. She's a great mum. And she, you know, I say to her like, you know, are you happy being a parent? I think for her, she was very independent, because before she was a mum, she was, you know, modelling and travelling the world and whatnot. And now she's a mum, but she's really happy. She's really content just like being a homeschool mum. And she likes being there, you know, and she obviously gets stressed out, and I get stressed out too. We all do. But ultimately it's a team thing. Being a parent is a teamwork. It's like, it's never a one person job, I think. And as long as you're kind of aligned in your views and your kind of expectations and goals, then you can kind of get on without too much conflict.
Yeah, you know, that was really beautiful. But I hope Rosie listens back and she hears those lovely words, because it's true. And actually, I think relationships are most definitely tested the most when you have children. There is no way sleep deprivation and you're focusing with an immense amount of pressure. I mean, I've got two children, you've got a three and four. I think it's incredible. You have to be a good team. So, Joe, I've got loads of questions from our listeners and I want to get them in while we've got the time, because you're a very busy person. And I want to pick one we kind of haven't touched on. So we actually haven't gone into food as much as I'd have wanted in terms of what you like. So Alexander has said, can you share your favourite quick and easy meal to prep for people that are super busy? So that's, you know, have you got any top three go-to meals that you quickly whip up with the kids or?
Yeah, I'd say my top three meals, number one would just be anything with like some eggs. So either like a, you know, an omelette or some scrambled eggs or little like, you know, breakfasty sort of egg muffins. I think they're great to have because energy, you know, they're quick, they're kind of, you can eat them cold as well, and they're, you know, or you could reheat them in the microwave. So that's a nice thing to have. Second thing probably is a stir fry. Like I love making, like, so I'm quite lazy. I buy the big bags of mixed stir fry veg, throw that in the pan, maybe with some chicken or prawns, and then I'll just add some, you know, soy sauce, a little bit of sweet chili sauce maybe, and then just a, you know, just some noodles or rice. So just things like that really are sort of 12 to 15 minute meals, super quick. And the third thing, I mean, I'm into curries. I like using coconut milk.
Oh, so love curries.
A tin of coconut milk or a tin of chopped tomatoes, because then you can go either way. You can go sort of Thai green curry paste, or you can go, you know, korma, or you could use like, you know, mild curry powder. I just think flavor is important. And I'm not someone who's making homemade paste. Like I'm fine store-bought, you know, Thai green curry paste or store-bought harissa paste, because these are the things that give lots of flavor. Yeah, they've got a few probably cheeky oils and they're not probably amazing all day, every day. But you're talking about a couple of teaspoons a few days a week. So I'm really not like anti-UPF. I just think it's about moderation sort of thing. And yeah, so I make a Thai green curry or a little sort of Indian curry. And yeah, just like, I like making these homemade naan breads at the moment. Like you just with yogurt and flour. Have you ever tried that? Yogurt and flour, make these little flatbreads.
Well, I've actually made the unhealthy version of the kind of delicious, like donutty type things with yogurt and flour. I haven't done naan.
Yeah, well, Jamie Oliver showed me. I was watching one of his shows and I just I thought, oh, I'll give that a go. And it's like little flatbreads of just flour and Greek yogurt. Yum. And they taste really yummy.
Mm. And I have to say, in terms of, like you said, the curry paste and things, the plant points you get from that far outweigh any teeny 2, 1.5 5% of any extra preservative you might have in that curry paste. And this is the equation that we have to discuss. I would rather you cook a curry from scratch with a shop bought curry paste than buy an actual curry that's made on the shop shelves, because you're looking at that percentage twist. They are great meal choices, delicious. Lucinda has said, have there been any real struggles behind the scenes with your business that you've encountered?
Oh, that's a good one. Well, yeah, my business has changed so much in the years. You know, it used to be just me and, like, you know, a few support coaches doing emails and sending out PDFs. And now it's a proper, like, you know, it's a tech company, right? So there's 30 people. My brother Nicky's the CEO.
Yeah.
I think the biggest challenge is probably, the biggest challenge has probably been, like, you know, hiring and also letting people go, right? If they don't quite fit culturally or didn't work out. And that's something that me and Nicky find difficult because we're quite sensitive. You know, we're very emotional. So yeah, you know, letting people go, like, you know, people that you've had friendships with and that aren't necessarily right for the business or the company. Like, that's, I think, the biggest challenge is that. But we always take care of them. We always make sure, you know, they're happy when they leave. We never want anyone to leave thinking like they weren't taken care of. So
no.
As a culture, as a business, we really care about employees. And that's why, you know, we do the 4-day work week. We do the, you know, we have, you know, 1 hour a day for exercise, 1 hour a day for food, for lunch. So we have a 2 hour like break where they can literally go and do a workout or go for a walk. And
nice.
Little things like that. We genuinely care about the wellness of our staff and our team.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, it's something to completely aspire to. I think that's fantastic. And I think all companies as well that are able to do that. I've never understood why huge companies and corporate offices, the amount of ones I've got into to give talks, and that's their whole break gone, that 20 minutes of your talk time, and then they've got a quick amount of time to quickly get something in, and then they're back at the desk. It should be something, I think, that is incorporated into workplaces. Do you do a lot of that, going in and getting them moving in the middle of the day? Because they're just sat down all day long.
Yeah, I've done a few corporate talks, especially during like lockdown. It was mainly remotely.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I'm talking within the business ourselves. Yeah, well, there's 30 of us, and obviously we encourage it. We say, look, you don't have to go to the gym. If you want to go for a walk, get some fresh air, like, use that time. Because when you come back, you know, you're going to be in a better position, in better mental health space. So I think sometimes you can say it, but you've got to really mean it and promote it. And we do obviously like lunchtime walkie-talkies, or we go out for like group walks and things. And just like just getting out of the office, getting some fresh air, it's really good.
Oh, it's so beneficial. Right, we've got one more question, then I'll do a fact or fiction round. So, okay, what are, from Sophie, your top tips for parents with children that are young to get healthy habits in? So what are your top three tips for healthy habits for young kids is the question.
I actually did a little video the other day. I did like my 10 sort of bits of advice in terms of helping your children become more adventurous and be a bit more, you know, into their healthy food, if you like. But it's a challenge. There's a lot of challenging points for this. But I'd say my top three, number one is, if you can, try to sit and eat together, you know, as
yeah,
a family or
so
with
good.
Your children, because they learn from everything, from watching you eat, from role modeling, from, you know, just seeing how you engage with certain foods. And so I think it's a really important thing. You might not be able to do it every day of the week, but even if it's a couple of times in the evening or once at the weekend, just sitting together is really positive. Second thing, you know, controversial, but I really believe this is important, is to just offer one thing. So there's no like three different meals for three different kids.
Yep.
If you do that, it's very easy for your child to dictate what they're going to eat. And so ultimately, offering one option, and obviously certain things are going to go, right, look, I do not like avocado. I'm never going to eat that texture. And you'll learn those things. But ultimately, you've got to keep offering new things. And if they're not into it right there and then, let them go away for an hour and play.
Yeah,
come back, reheat it. And 9 times out of 10, they will eat that food. So I think that's a really important one. And third one, I think, is to be, you know, relaxed and consistent. So don't have pressure. Don't put pressure on yourself or your children to eat like 3 big meals a day. You know, if they're not quite hungry at that moment in time, it's all good. I think the more relaxed you are around the food, the more relaxed they become, and they'll lead you. They'll start to regulate their own sort of appetite, and you'll sort of see, actually, you know, they might not want lunch at 12 o'clock on the nose, but in a couple of hours' time, they're going to be more receptive and try a new thing. So I think they're my top three tips, yeah.
They're brilliant tips. And I've loved seeing Indy in the kitchen. Like, I love the fact that you also get your kids cooking with you, Joe, because if you don't show them, how are they meant to understand or know or really get that sense of achievement when she cooks up something lovely for her siblings or something? That must be a proud parent moment for you as well.
Yeah, I mean, that comes down to the whole life skills thing. Like, I want my children to be able to know that they can cook their own food when they grow up. They can look after their own mental health, they can exercise. And so, yeah, I think cooking is a really great way to introduce them to food and get them in excited. But, you know, it started off really basic things, like she'd stir in some porridge or, you know, some berries into the porridge, or she'd put some peanut butter on the end. And now she's making, I mean, I can observe her, and she can make an omelette. She can make,
amazing.
Last night she cooked her own steak. And
oh,
she's only
wow.
four, you know, she's five. So
yeah,
She used a sharp knife, you know, because I've taught her from like the basics, and now like it's just wonderful to see. Kids are really talented. They're really clever when they get learning. Like they can learn so quick. So I think it's about just putting a bit of time in with it, and just it is stressful, and there's a bit of mess and it's chaos, but it's really lovely to look around and see your kids cooking, and you'll be so proud when they're sort of, you know, 11, 12, 13. You'll be coming home and they'll be cooking you dinner.
I know, that's the dream, right? But you're right, that's part of society that actually isn't passed down. And in Mediterranean cultures and all the research on blue zones, there's a lot of actual family cooking that takes place at home, which you do not see in the UK as part of a kind of core family value in a lot of households. So that is an interesting one. Right, Joe, moving on to our fact or fiction round. Are you ready?
Do I just shout fact or fiction, yeah?
Yeah, we don't have to shout it, but you can definitely say fact or fiction. Okay, right, here we go. Number one, doing fasted cardio burns more fat.
I think that's fiction.
Yep. Eating carbs after 6 p.m. leads to weight gain.
That's definitely fiction.
Drinking coffee before a workout improves performance.
I think that could be a fact, yeah. I think that could be, maybe a bit of an energy stimulant, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good ergogenic aid. High intensity interval training is the most effective form of exercise for fat loss.
I mean, obviously I love my HIIT, but I think a combination of HIIT with strength, like real resistance training is the best. So I'm going to say fiction.
You can spot reduced fat from specific areas of your body through targeted exercises.
Oh, if only it was that easy. That's fiction.
Yeah, if only it were, right? Eating small, frequent meals throughout the day boosts metabolism.
That's old school bodybuilding. That's fiction.
That is old school, isn't it? Lifting weights makes women bulky.
That is fiction. It's actually amazing for you to lift weights. And it's very hard building muscle. So yeah, lift as heavy as you can and keep going.
God, it's so hard. I'm trying at the moment and it's so hard. Sugar is the enemy when it comes to weight loss.
I keep seeing that. Everyone sort of says, I mean, it's not the enemy, but it definitely contributes, isn't it? I'm going to say it's not the enemy, but it's a big factor in, you know, I would say energy consumption, because it's so easy to consume thousands of calories of sugar a day, isn't it?
Yeah, no.
What would you say? Is that fact or fiction to you? Is that fact or fiction for you?
Well, fundamentally, it's fiction, but it is because it's more palatable, people eat more. It's not the sugar itself, it's the fact we all eat so much of it that's the problem. So you got it right. You got it perfectly right.
Right.
Some of these are hard to answer. Skipping meals helps with weight loss.
Well, intermittent fasting, I'm going to say fact. I'm going to say, because I feel like I'm being tested because you're a proper scientist. You're like nutritionist. Is it a fact? I mean, is it fact or fiction?
Yeah. So sorry, I didn't realise I've made these so hard. I'm so sorry. Fact.
That's okay. I'm learning.
Technically fact. Yeah, no, it is a fact, but only if it doesn't then stimulate a poor relationship with food. Some people skip meals and then overeat for binge tendencies because it triggers that psychological component. So technically energy restriction, yes. Fact. The last question, you need to spend hours in the gym to see results.
That's fiction. I do believe that a short workout, you know, a little bit every day can definitely help you on your journey to a fitter, healthier body. So yeah, that was a great quiz, but I definitely feel like you tricked me in a couple.
Sorry, some of them are so nuanced, but that's what I love about it. You should see when we get the scientists on the podcast and they cannot answer fact or fiction. They're like, I don't know how to answer this question, but it sparks questions. And this is what shows we're all unique, Joe, because there is no one size fits all. And that is wrapping up today's episode. And it's actually quite gutting because there's so much to you that we could cover. And for me personally, there's so many angles I wanted to go in terms of being a father, that element of things, managing the business, because I know firsthand that behind the scenes, having any sort of business yourself is a lot of work. Getting to a position where you are now, it doesn't happen overnight. And I think a lot of people will look at you, Joe, online and think it's kind of like an overnight success story. And I know you try to say a lot, look, this is where I started with my boot camps, and there's still perceptions that I think people get online, but behind the scenes as a family man and, you know, taking on a lot of those responsibilities shared equally with your wife, that it's a lot. So we always finish with a food for thought, Joe, at the end of each episode. And I think mine today would be, I love the words you used earlier, where you said, it should be about the joy. There's too much negativity. And it's fact, when a negative headline comes out, it's 60% more likely to get more traction than a positive news headline. We know that if you just turn on the news every day. So let's try and make a change. Let's look at what Joe's doing. Try and get some positivity in. I'm going to try now at bedtime just to just even switch on a bit of yoga instead of just sitting and watching TV with my laptop every night. We can all make a small difference. If you had a take-home message, Joe, for everyone, it's very hard to pick one, but just a food for thought for everybody listening today, what would it be?
Well, I loved your food for thought. And also, I've got an idea. Why don't we leave this, let this one roll, and then maybe we can do a part two in a few weeks' time or something, or a couple of months,
that.
Yeah?
I would absolutely love
that. We'll get into
that.
It a bit more.
There's so many areas I think we need to scratch the surface of. And I was actually wondering as well, while I've got Joe on the podcast, perfect time to ask, I'm going to try and do something on a government level in the next few months that I'm preparing behind the scenes to do something on the nutrition food landscape. And I know a few others that Joe probably knows doing this. And we need a voice like Joe Wicks to help us get this campaign out there. So if you're able, Joe, I know you have no detail on it, so you can't exactly just say yes, but would you be able to get behind something that means helping the kids and everyone with a healthier food landscape?
Yeah, send me a DM and let me know more about it and stuff. I mean, I know Jamie's working with obviously with some stuff at the moment, but yeah, we'll have a catch up offline. But I didn't do my food for thought, did I?
You didn't finish it. Finish the food for thought.
So my food for thought is that whatever's going on in your mind today, however you're feeling, you know, if you're feeling stressed or if you're feeling a bit down or overwhelmed by everything, just remember that you have this amazing ability to really change the way you feel, and it can be done through, you know, the food we eat. Like, you can really change your mood, you can really put yourself in a positive headspace, and through movement. So yeah, even if you just go for a 10-minute walk, or maybe you're out listening to this now, like, it's great to just get in nature, move your body, do something physical, because when you do, you can temporarily shift your mindset, you can start to feel more positive, and you know, you can start to like work through all these things that are going on in your mind. So I really hope you stay active, put good food in your body, and get a good night's sleep. Lots of love,
Joe, thank you. And everyone, check out Joe's new book, Fitter, Healthier, Happier. Is that the title? Fitter, Healthier, Happier?
That's it, yeah. That's it. Yeah, that's the one. Thank you.
I will be getting it for my kids. And honestly, Joe, thank you so much for coming on Food for Thought.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening. I can't believe that's it. Gosh, it just flies by, and what a series. It's been such an honour to have so many incredible guests, and I really do hope that you've learned how our bodies are truly as unique as our personalities. Also, that this podcast is giving you the confidence that you need to enjoy your life to the fullest, because there's just so much misinformation out there across the media, especially social media now. You just don't really know who to trust. So hopefully this is your go-to resource. And of course, a huge thank you to our guests. I honestly don't know how to thank them enough. They're just incredible, giving up their time to come on the podcast. And some of them traveled from so far. And of course, all of you for listening. Thank you. I can't believe so many of you are now listening. And if you enjoy it, do pop us a review, share Food for Thought with your friends and family. So if you would like some more resources on top of the podcast, you can check out my best-selling books. We've got The Science of Nutrition, Deliciously Healthy Pregnancy, or of course, my original Renourish back in 2017. There's something coming on the horizon though, guys. So if you could head over to Amazon now, hit pre-order on The Science of Plant-Based Nutrition. And if you'd like to book into the Retrition Clinic for a consultation with one of our amazing psychologists, dietitians, nutritionists, or explore healthy recipes, just pop on to retrition.com. I'm on every social media channel at Retrition, so check it out.